Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
Congregational and Community Responses to Vulnerable Older Persons, led by Dr. Dennis Myers, Professor of Social Work at the Baylor University School of Social Work, Waco, Texas. Today's audio conference workshop focuses on how social workers and congregations can respond to the impoverishment and isolation that inhabit the daily lives of a significant number of older persons. It calls attention to unique assets that energize congregational responsiveness and demonstrates how effective preparation, vision, attention to assets, care with congregational volunteers, awareness of barriers in ministry design, locate ministry at the point of greatest need and maximum input. So now, without any further ado, I'm delighted to present our speaker, Dr. Dennis Myers. Dennis, it's all yours.
Thank you very much, Rick. Welcome, everyone. My name is Dennis Myers. I'm with the School of Social Work at Baylor University. I want to welcome you to our conference. I'm very mindful some of you are already deeply involved with older, impoverished persons, and I wish we had time for conversation. I'm looking forward to that possibility perhaps in the future. Joining me in the room today is Van Jones. Van Jones is currently at Central Texas Senior Ministry, where he's a client coordinator. Van is the person that activated my interest in this topic area. Van is doing this work on a daily basis, and I'm so honored that he's joined us today. I do want to also thank NACSW for offering this audio conference, and Rick, for your tremendous support for all that we're doing here. Van and I we're in the midst of a research project where we're interviewing 50 impoverished elders out of his client load, which we randomly selected. I will be including some narrative from our conversations with them. We're very interested in hearing from them concerning how they make sense of their living, but also their resiliency and their faith. And I think you'll be pleased with some of the narratives that we're able to include with this particular presentation. I have updated the PowerPoint. If you have an older copy, Rick will be happy to send that to you so you can have that update. Van and I have also provided a paper that goes along with this presentation that you can follow as well and have for future reference. The thing that's most obvious to Van and I and to those of us that are serving this population group is that the need for services for impoverished elders is not going to decline but will be increasing, particularly with the changes in health care. Well, this statement says it well. It says, witnessing firsthand the effects of increasing longevity on community life, every congregation finds at its doorstep the compelling demand for ministry with and for vulnerable older persons and their social networks. To give a sense of the day-to-day kinds of issues that impoverished elders face, we've included a couple of narratives. Here's the first one. Like today, my front bedroom door jammed, and I called for somebody to come that could get down on their knees and look whatever. There was a box that had come in the mail, and I set it down upright, and it was tall and narrow, and it fell over. And I didn't know there, but there was a cat in there. The cat knocked it over, and the box fell against the door, and I couldn't open it. And my checkbook was in there, and the cat was in there, and I needed to get in there, and I couldn't open the door. Another example from one of our narratives. They've been there a year, and I still don't know their name. I don't have a single neighbor that I can rely on, not one. If something happens, I'll just call 911. I fell 2 years or 2.5 years ago. I dialed 911. I had falls all over the house. So I just crawled to the nearest phone, and I dialed 911. And I crawl to the nearest door, and I unlock it for them, and they come and pick me up. And then about 2 months ago, I fell again. So I told them, I said, I could go another 2 years. They wanted to take me to the emergency room. I said, no. Maybe if I could go another 2 years, it could be okay. But how else could I get a couple of good-looking guys to come to my house and pick me up on the floor, pick me up off the floor? I think our question that we would want to address today is, how can social workers empower congregations and religiously affiliated organizations to enact vision and initiatives that resonate with God's working in the lives of vulnerable older persons. The advantages or benefits, I think, for your participation, at least from my perspective, will be as follows. I would hope that our time together would deepen your compassion for older persons on the margins of community life in all of our communities. I think this conference will be of some help to you in discovering and matching assets for problem and need resolution. We also hope to enrich congregational responses to the overwhelming personal and environmental challenges faced by impoverished elders. And then lastly, to create and sustain effective congregation and community collaborations to assist this population group. Our agenda today, we hope to raise awareness of the assets and needs of older persons who struggle with spiritual and relational, economic, and environmental vulnerability, and highlight the importance of congregational awareness of key public and community resources. We hope to specify the role that social workers play in creating and mediating resiliency-based transactions between vulnerable elders and congregational and community resources. We hope to call attention to the unique assets that energize congregational responsiveness and demonstrate how effective preparation, vision, attention to assets, care with congregational volunteers, awareness of barriers, and ministry design can locate ministry at the point of need and maximum impact. A five-dimensional model for design of congregational responses is proposed, and we demonstrate how congregations can form strategic alliances to strengthen resiliency of older persons on the margins of community life. Well, it's important that we bring a person that struggles in this area into our conversation, so I wanted to introduce you to Mrs. Stewart. Mrs. Stewart is a 69-year-old disabled African-American woman who resides in a low-income area of a mid-sized city in Texas. She is single and lives in a rent house, spending much of her time alone. At the present time, a 19-year-old unemployed nephew lives with her. Ms. Stewart suffers from severe arthritis, which renders her quite immobile and unable to cook for herself. She has been diagnosed with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and glaucoma, and she is anxious and depressed. She occasionally shows evidence of confusion. Shortly following a move to another rental in July, she found herself confronted with financial instability. She is vague about the reasons, but attempting to house her nephew must have placed some burden on her low-income budget. She was 1 month behind on her rent and was having difficulty buying food. Her $700 monthly income does not allow for much leeway, and once behind, it's difficult for her to catch up. Her main joy is attending church, and her minister and her wife provide transportation each Sunday. Like many of her generation, the first thing she sees upon entering the house is a Bible. Ms. Stewart stated that she always managed to take care of herself and considers herself a survival. And we'll be referring to Mrs. Stewart as we go through our time together and talk more about her situation. Older adults are vulnerable because of difficulties with personal care, self-neglect, medication management, and unsafe living environments. Vulnerability is defined by Cassidy et al. As the failure to engage in acts of self-care, adequately regulate safe and independent living, or take actions to prevent conditions or situations that adversely affect personal health and safety. I'm noting that you are involved in the chat experience, and I'll try to respond to those as we come to our time for questions. Older adults are vulnerable because of difficulties in personal care, self-neglect, medication management, and unsafe living environments, as I've just stated. They can be found in homes like running water, air conditioning or heating, and in some instances, inadequate flooring. Those that have researched the area conclude that the neglect, both self-neglect and community neglect, that older persons experience is a consequence of the victim's lack of economic resources to provide for themselves the basic necessities of life. These persons are segregated, isolated, marginalized, and have extreme difficulty and daily survival. So the vulnerabilities that you see are certainly physically evident, but they're also psychologically and spiritually evident for the persons that are at the heart of our concern. And in trying to profile this vulnerability, we can comment that The persons that are our concern are alone and impoverished. They live in hidden corridors of subsidized apartments, substandard housing, and low-end motel rooms of every street and rural route in America. They live in the crucible of increasing economic health care and community service scarcity. The weight of recession and cutbacks in health and human service press on their vulnerabilities with a fierceness that is unprecedented. You see there the profile in terms of age and gender. The one I would point out most significantly, obviously, is the last. There's a considerable loneliness in this population group and a devastating kind of invisibleness in our communities. This kind of vulnerability often leads to a loss of hope, and in our narratives, we encounter this kind of response. The interviewer asks, do you believe that each day has potential? The interviewee responds, no, the same old, same old. The interviewer comments, can you see a light at the end of the tunnel? The interviewee responds, no, I'm not looking for that anyway. The interviewer comments, can you bring about positive change? No, I'm stuck in this mess. You feel stuck? Oh, I am. Giving voice to the sense of loss of hope that sometimes occurs as a result of this crushing vulnerability. In terms of the impact economically and in terms of that inadequate housing, we know that 5% of persons 65 plus live in physically inadequate housing. The National Academy of Science estimates that 20% of Americans who are over 65 live below the poverty line, and that's about 8.6 million people. This 20% figure includes unreimbursed medical and other expenses. And of course, poverty has an unusually devastating effect on African-American women as well as Hispanic women as well. The social determinants of vulnerability are stated there before you. The low income and low education are factors, obviously. Lack of social support, as we've mentioned, very significantly expressed. Inadequate diet and food insecurity become points of daily struggle for some of the folks that are the heart of our concern today.
Let me just tell you one question comment that came up that you might want to respond to. Carolyn mentioned that I am in an affluent community. Our elder congregants have many of the same problems as those who are not impoverished. And then Beth from Nebraska commented in response to that question, the difference is the type of care they will receive if they need out-of-home care. In my experience, Medicaid-approved facilities are not the same as private pay. So those were a couple of the questions and comments. If you would like to respond to those, I'm sure that would be appreciated.
Well, I just appreciate that. That's exactly the point. We're focusing on vulnerability due to economic status, but clearly in all our communities, even in affluent areas, the notion of aloneness, the notion of invisibility is just as rampant. So I appreciate those comments very much. So we're ready to move on to the next.
Anyone at this point with a question or comment, again, if you can hit *6 on your keypad, you'll be able to be heard. Maybe for my peace of mind, just to make sure that that's working, Bill Tarr, I see that you're in on the call. Can you just hit *6 on your pad and say, hey, that way we know that folks have the capacity to enter into the conversation if they'd like?
Hi, Rick. I'm part of it. Thank you.
Great. So last chance for anyone who wants to hit *6 and make a question or comment. Okay, Dennis, we'll go back to you then.
Okay, to offset vulnerability is resilience. I indicated Van Jones, my colleague, really has a deep interest in understanding how in the world these persons seem to be so resilient and faithful in spite of the kind of vulnerabilities they face. So our research study also looked at resilience, which we define as the capacity to bounce back, to adapt, to have enough elasticity, flexibility, pliability to incorporate or instigate change. The crux of all resilience is relationship. And then you have a quote by Zeiss et al. Indicating the fact that older adults demonstrate greater resilience in response to difficult or challenging life experiences, and they're better able to maintain a positive emotional state than younger adults. And then, of course, the connection between resiliency and spirituality. Fry notes that religiosity and spirituality explain more variance in an older person's sense of well-being than did sociodemographic variables, resources, health, and life events, which helps explain the times when Van would sit with a person in abject poverty and yet sense a deep sense of resilience and spirituality about them. So the question really shifts for us from how can we reduce vulnerability to how can we increase resilience. Here are a couple of quotes from our narratives regarding faith and resilience. The interview asks, what helps you make it day to day? The respondent replies, the grace of God, the goodness of God gives me, from the time I open my eyes to the time I go to bed at night. Another, you know it's easy to say whatever God leads me, but you know when you get down to it, I ask myself, what are my plans? Because I don't intend to die. My plan is to be able to walk free of the walker and the cane, and then when I do that, I'll be free to do whatever else comes. And here the strong theme of resilience and faith in spite of vulnerability. We also receive narratives of persons that the vulnerability does overtake them, and we do not see the same connection. Here's an example. The interviewee says, I don't think about God anymore. Interview responds, do you feel a connection at all to all of life? The interview says, no. All right, let's see. I find strength in religion. As the interviewer asks questions to follow up, the interviewee responds, no. I have two sisters that are, say, they're religious, but who wants to be like that? So if resilience is a modifiable construct, congregations and their community partners have an opportunity to reduce the spiritual, economic, and environmental impoverishment, isolation, health decline, and loss of personhood that diminish resilience, at the same time energize the self-esteem, thriving faith, and social support that increases it. As we identify our population concern, the primary needs that we would expect are, as we would imagine, finances, home house repair, transportation, medical, dental care, and advocacy. But I also would point out the top three, identity, intimacy, and significance. These are the most significant in some ways to the persons of our concern, often overlooked, unfortunately. So what community services are helpful currently to deal with this population? Responding to the needs of this group has never been as critical as now. There are a set of public and private provision that is available in community, and these are identifiable across these domains of service. The web of potential resources can be organized into these categories: food security, protection, legal services, in-home and support services, transportation, medical, dental, housing, case coordination, and income. And then there are key community players that most of us are pretty familiar with, Adult Protective Services, Area Agencies on Aging, the relatively new, at least in our state, Aging and Disability Resource Centers, which is an attempt to integrate services in community for this population group, Social Security, VA, Qualified Mental Medicare Beneficiary is a possibility in the Medicare. Obviously, Medicaid is a big player. Local NGOs and our religiously affiliated organizations are at play. EOAC, community development, particularly around housing opportunities, home health care, and city transportation. Non-governmental organizations and religiously affiliated programs complement and augment services in these categories. In some cases, these organizations contract with federal programs to deliver services. An example is the nutritional programs funded by the Old Americans Act that tend to be delivered by NGOs. In addition, NGOs offer services that augment public provision, such as guardianship, utility payments, and transportation. Congregations may have their own versions of home-delivered meals, home maintenance, and monitoring services. So we can begin to identify a web of services. You see before you a chart which identifies the service domain, federal, state funded services, NGO, religiously affiliated, and then sometimes complementary congregational services. An examination of these range of resources might lead one to conclude that ample federal, state, and non-governmental provisions available to address at least basic needs. There are, however, significant barriers to effective connections between public provision and utilization of resources. Low utilization patterns for food stamps are an example by older potential participants are a case in point. The challenges we face, as we all know, are scarcity of funding, and awareness of the services that are available, and the incredible need for the integrative care coordination that our persons need and they tend to never receive. So what can congregations offer vulnerable persons? Complexity and scarcity on the provision side and uncertainty and inaccessibility on the applicant side reduce the likelihood of a successful transaction that yields beneficial and sustainable flow of resources. This failed transaction creates untold suffering for the impoverished older person. Congregations have historically stepped into this gap, and their resources are needed more than ever. The impact of their involvement will be maximized by a prayerful and intentional response that fits the helping with the systemic and personal needs of older persons in their community, with their resiliency and other assets, and with the initiatives of community partners. In the remaining sections of this presentation, we offer guidelines and models of how congregations can be more strategic and powerful as they deliver, mediate, and advocate for life-sustaining provision and well-being. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation initiatives have been a significant factor in energizing NGOs as well as religious affiliated congregations in terms of dealing with this population group. I would also hold up the Stephen Ministry, which is a ministry which is church facilitated. It's an internationally organized organization. Some of you may be involved with Stephen Ministry. It was started in 1975, and they have over now 11,000 participating organizations. And they do exceptional work in terms of dealing with this population group. In terms of understanding the importance of the church for the impoverished elder, back to our research, a couple of narratives. The interviewee notes, I get a lot of strength from my church, and to me, my family is my church. Church family is to me tighter than family. The interviewer asks, how does the church give you strength? The person responds, because we all love the Lord. We pray for each other. We draw strength from each other. Okay, and what do you give to them? I give back, we all give back to each other. We pray for each other, and we visit with each other. We spend time together, and the women of the church, we go out and eat once a month. Another excerpt from my narrative, how's the church helping you? Well, they lift me up in prayer. They hold me up in prayer. They come in like when I'm having a real, like if we were sick, the pastor and his wife would bring us food. I mean, you know, like when we're really sick, not just having a bad day, but sick. The church becomes a vital resource within our service network. So we can view the congregation as a source of energy, resources, and strength, support, partnership, belonging, belief, hope, and change. The strengths of congregations rest primarily in its faith-motivated servants. State faith-motivated service rather than volunteers for a reason. Really consider both the persons that are serving our congregations not as volunteers, but as servants, because they are called to respond in love and sacrifice to others as God loves, ready to transform and be transformed in their encounter. So I prefer the notion of servants rather than volunteers for our congregationally based volunteers. Congregations are accessible, they're innovative, they're trusted, mission-driven. Stigma that often accompanies public sector kinds of provision are not present in congregations. They have an incredible accessibility and trust factor for our impoverished elders. However, there are challenges, obviously. Because of the reliance on volunteers, sometimes a propensity for superficial responses. There's a kind of a showing up for an initial help and then maybe never returning. The sustainability becomes an issue. There are low levels of accountability. low intentionality, and low levels of collaboration, which is part of the struggle for getting congregations involved in this area. Let me take another break here and check in with you. What are your questions and comments?
Thanks, Dennis. Again, anyone who would like to pose a question or make a comment, please hit *6 on your telephone keypad or unmute your computer microphone at this point in time.
I'm on a radio conference.
Oh, okay. Did I tell you last week about Donna Nace, who had the cat climber and all that? Erica just called back, the lady who had originally called, who was internet friends with her. She's been trying to get in touch with her the last couple of days and couldn't. I don't know if I updated you.
Can I interrupt for just a minute? We were looking for folks to unmute their phones or the microphones on their computer if they had any questions about the session. Anyone like to pose a question or make a comment?
The day that we found out about this,
right.
Dave called.
Right. And we said, tell him to call 911, is what we said.
Okay, Dennis, I think you can probably proceed.
Okay.
That's what we told. That's what our advice to Dave was to have.
Ministries that empower personal, spiritual, and relational resilience and revival for the older person, for service partners, of God's grace and provision through intentional design and engaged relationships. Important ministry considerations involve effective preparation, vision, attention to assets, care with service partners, awareness of barriers, ministry design, help congregational leaders and service partners locate ministry at the point of greatest need and maximum impact. We recommend the following steps for leaders designing congregational ministries for impoverished elders. First would be the importance of preparation. Prayer that the ministry will align itself with God's intentions so that the ministry will be mutually beneficial or provide mutually beneficial relationships with impoverished elders. I think the thing really begins in prayer, and I think that's the key element in the notion of preparation. I think it's also important to conduct an environmental scan to fully understand how the community is already responding and to identify how the transactions between the impoverished elder person and the resource environment happen or fail to happen. Number three, I think it's important to assess the nature and extent of the congregation's current response with an eye for recognizing what is going well. And then lastly, look for creative ways for the congregation to hear the stories of older persons and to allow them to teach the congregation about resiliency in the face of overwhelming circumstances. As a note, I'm currently working with my congregation and hopefully getting them to be more supportive of the kind of ministry that Van's involved in. The challenge I have is they have no personal experience with the impoverished elder, and the situations that people live in are far from them. Part of my task was to bring the reality of their lives into the more affluent aspects of our congregation and maybe thereby get a little more support for the impoverished elder. In addition to preparing, the next step would be the importance of casting the vision. That is a notion of our picture in your head and in the congregation's heart about what will happen as a result of the ministry. Here's an example of a statement that is along those lines, that every older person facing challenges to their personhood and resiliency will have the opportunity to, number one, deepen their relationship with Jesus Christ, second, experience intellectual, relational, and physical enrichment, and third, contribute to the mission and life of the congregation. First step is prepare. Second is cast the vision. The vision is so significant. Here are a couple of citations from our narrative that give a sense that if the vision is cast and actually comes into fruition, we're able to assist persons with this kind of orientation. For example, the interviewer asks, what helps you make it day to day? And the person responds, the grace of God, the goodness of God gives me. From the time I open my eyes to the time I go to bed. The person is clearly attuned to God's work in their lives. It surely would help them if there was a congregation would come alongside and enable them to activate this deep faith. Another example, how do you handle when you can't do what you want to do? The person laughs, I just sit down and say, well, I try to look at the bright side. It wasn't meant to be for me to do this. So a congregation with vision is able to support persons who have strong faith and a sense of resiliency. Third step would be to focus on assets and resiliency, to be aware of what strengths are present or potentially present that can be activated and enriched in the environment. As social workers, we get to draw on the strengths perspective as well as the ecological perspective in this kind of ministry formation activity. Looking for strengths is a part of what we as social workers are about. The ecological perspective points us to the importance of transactions between the impoverished elder and their environment so that growth occurs for both, so that as congregations we stand in the gap as we attempt to make the connections between the strengths of the individual and the strengths of the environment per se. One advantage of looking for strengths is just doing that, paying attention to how the person's contributing to their community. Rarely a question asked of impoverished elders, because we're so oriented to providing assistance, we rarely ask about their contributions. This particular person in our research made this comment: I belong to the TNR group, which is the Trap, Neuter, and Release program for cats, and the volunteer came, and between her and me, we tried to trap every cat we could in our area. Now we're doing great in this area. So our impoverished elders are involved in contributing to our communities, but no one really asks or pays attention, and that will be an important job for us to accomplish. The next slide involves an asset typology, which is intended to help us as we think about and look for assets in the lives of our impoverished elders. Investing time in identifying assets reveals paths to need meeting and deeper responses to the challenges impoverished older persons face. The intentional search for what is left and not as lost is counterintuitive in a culture that is blinded by false images of old, poor, and widowed. This table, the reader sees a list of possible internal and external assets that may be present in the lives, congregation, and communities of impoverished older persons. We've adapted this list from the developmental asset-based approach created and applied to youth by the Search Institute. We also set this up to kind of be complementary. That is, attention to personhood has a connection with the external assets available in the community. That faithfulness assets internally become connected with the assets, external assets of the congregation, and relational competency with the supportive relationships available within the community as well. We think that this list of potential assets will be helpful to you as you think about what to reach for in terms of increasing the resilience and spirituality focus for impoverished elders. In terms of looking for assets, sometimes they're difficult to experience, particularly when we examine the physical environment that the person is involved in. However, person tells us in this kind of environment has an important message for us. Irrespective of the physical experience, this person makes this comment: I feel a spiritual presence in this house all the time. My kids tell me, Mother, lock your doors. Mom, you've got your doors unlocked. Some mornings I'll get up and my door is not locked. I thought I locked it and I opened to check on Offie. Apparently it's a cat. We say goodbye to each other and you know, and that door is a little stubborn. It doesn't always click. It doesn't click. It's not locked. I'll get up the next morning and I think, oh, that door hasn't been locked. I figure the Lord is taking care of me. I talk to him about it every night. I said, if somebody wants to break in this house, I don't care how many locks I've got on it, they ain't going to get in. Again, emphasizing the importance of these places, these dwellings are sacred places, irrespective of their physical appearance. The next step in terms of creating a responsive ministry would be to nourish servant partners, to discover the internal and external assets and how these assets can be engaged to enrich the flow of needed goods. So we want service partners that are asset finders in terms of their involvement. They also should be recipients of prayer support and training by the congregation. The things that we as social workers take for granted, the capacity to engage others, to know how to deal with resistance, are critical in dealing with the impoverished elder individual. Third involves we need to embody the resiliency as service partners that also characterize the lives of those we serve. And then lastly, the opportunities that are available need to reflect on the ways this time is shaping and affecting their own faith and sense of significance. So as our service partners get involved, we need to allow them time to make connections between that service opportunity and the way that the Lord is growing their own faith in their own lives, and make that text and experience a kind of connection for them. Next idea has to do with overcoming barriers to engagement. What personal, familial, cultural, and or environmental barriers block engagement? Because the truth of it is, though there is great need, there's sometimes also great resistance. Here's an example. Well, I never have to ask. So far, I never have to ask for no help. I've been pretty well myself. I never really have to. Well, really, I never have. I don't remember a time I did not have to ask for help. So there's a strong independent stream in this particular population, and knowing how to work with that, knowing how to engage is part of the gift that service partner needs to be aware of and be able to activate. Another example of the kinds of barriers, person says, I should be on HUD, but they won't give it to me because my son messed up and I got bad credit, and I don't even know what they and I, and I only get $675 a month, so I live here and it's $400 a month for this dump, and though I never lived like this before. So the barriers can be significant. In our narrative, we've identified these may not be all of them, but they certainly capture the kinds of barriers that we've encountered. Resistance, I've already mentioned, resistance to accepting help, resistance around the notion that someone external resource is coming in, and that can be a threatening sort of thing. Sometimes families can be discouraging of involvement. Just fear of the unknown, lack of trust of the government. We've also heard the person states they don't want to take from someone else who might need it more. They do not perceive themselves as having great need compared to others. There's fears around losing their home if they sign up, fears around being placed in a nursing home if they reveal too much of their situation. And you see the rest of the other kinds of barriers that persons encounter in this particular ministry. The next important area would be to deliver ministries with intentionality and to think with intentionality, with purpose, about what factors need to be considered when designing and delivering a ministry for vulnerable older persons. We think there are five dimensions that need to be consideration. The first would be focus. That is this ministry going to be one in which the person has an opportunity to give to the congregation or community, or is it one in which they will be receiving? One involves activating their calling. The second involves activating the sense of blessing on having received something that is important in their lives. In terms of locus, what will be the source or the location of the ministry? Will it be the congregation itself, and the ministry will be to congregational members alone? Will it involve non-congregational members, persons in the community? Or maybe will it involve an intentional ministry on an international basis for impoverished elders in other countries? Certainly a great need there as well. In terms of age, are we going to focus specifically on the impoverished elder per se, or will we with intentionality involve an intergenerational approach, involve young people in the ministry so we can get the kind of cross-generational benefit that might be available there? In terms of delivery, are we going to deliver it one-on-one, face-to-face? Will it be a group interaction? Or we're going to create a program which will involve many. And then lastly, collaboration. What kind of collaboration do we want to have? Are we going to do this in a siloed and solo way, or are we going to involve other partners? So we can think about three ways as we think about collaboration that are possible. We ask the question, how can congregations and community programs collaborate? First question is, what can congregations offer community programs and services? Secondly, what do community programs and services have to offer the congregation? And lastly, what can community programs and services and congregations do together to support and sustain vulnerable elders? When the model is that of the congregation offering support for the community program, we have several examples where that may be a possible avenue for our ministry. Obviously, the faith-motivated service within congregations are a wonderful resource for agencies as they attempt to enact their mission, particularly in these times of scarce and reduced resources. Sometimes the congregation can serve as a nutrition site for a Meals and Wheels program. Sometimes a parish nurse program can link with a public health entity within the community. You see other possibilities. Particularly interested in the Adopt an Agency for a congregation with intentionality adopts persons involved like Van in care and does something specific to recognize their contribution and to encourage them as they deal with the impoverished elder person. Another model for collaboration involves the community program itself linking itself with the congregation as the congregation provides service. So the question is, what do community programs and services have to offer congregations? We can think of several possibilities there. One would be an awareness of services. Service network is very complex. Many persons within congregations are clueless about what's available in the community, and the opportunity for agencies to come in and involve educational experiences could be a real asset. Information assistance along the same lines. Care management to organize and help manage and coordinate care within members in the congregation that where the congregation does not have a social worker that might volunteer to do this kind of help. Health education for congregants would be another possibility. And this consultation as the congregation considers what it might do in terms of ministry with this particular age group. Another model for collaboration involves the congregation and the community program working together. What can community programs and services and congregations do together to support and sustain vulnerable elders? Examples, the congregation and the community agency together could identify service gaps and resources where they may join forces for dealing with the challenges of the impoverished elder. They could jointly advocate for legislation involving some funding proposals that might make a difference in the lives of the impoverished elder. Maybe a grant is possible between the two, and together they may create the possibility of a new program to serve this population group. As we think about these areas for ministry, and specifically the matters around collaboration, I'd like to go back to Mrs. Stewart and talk about what happened in her case as an illustration of the application of the principles that we're talking about today. These guidelines can be applied to the case of Mrs. Stewart, illustrating how they inform the selection, organization, and integration of a ministry plan most responsive to her presenting issues. Mrs. Stewart was at the center of all initiatives taken to respond. This was care planning with her and not for her. A social worker providing class services at a Meals and Wheels program offered a nonprofit agency energized and mediated. Let me say that again. A social worker providing class services at a Meals and Wheels program offered by a nonprofit agency energized and mediated the delivery of care and service servant partnership with the pastor of her church. Both of these partners were committed to upholding Mrs. Stewart's personhood and supporting the level of resilience she demonstrated in her current situation. Her assets included her longstanding membership in a small and stable congregation, friends that provide transportation, her motivation to support her nephew, the love and care offered by her pastor and his spouse, her resilient response to life challenges, and her trust in God. The response had both a giving and receiving focus. She was clearly in need of church and community services, while she also had resources to offer. There was also an interest in clarifying and strengthening her relationship with her nephew. We applied Model 2, which involves a community agency augmenting the resources of a congregation's outreach and ministry. This was the approach that best captures the framework for the response to her. The goal was to select interventions approved by Mrs. Stewart and, to the extent possible, offered by her congregation, supplemented by the Meals and Wheels program and other community resources. This placed the pastor as a key collaborator in this case, with the social worker serving as case manager, to include providing information and referral to community resources. There was an immediate need for utility and rental assistance, with numerous community resources available for one-time and immediate help with the utility vendors themselves or with Salvation Army. Ms. Stewart was more comfortable with drawing on the financial resources of the church itself. The church's account for this kind of assistance was limited. With the permission of the pastor, the social worker arranged for a donation from a Sunday school class at an urban, more affluent church to supplement the account with enough funds to cover her utility and rental assistance and needs for 3 months. To supplement her nutrition needs, the social worker facilitated enrolling her in SNAP, while the pastor was able to work out a plan for those who were willing to provide transportation to obtain food items. This resource was particularly helpful because of the complexity of the SNAP application process was a detriment to Mrs. Stewart, as was her inability to get to the grocery store. The pastor enlisted an accountant in the congregation to help her budget her limited monthly income and help with bills and monthly medical expenses. Ms. Stewart and her nephew met with the pastor and the social worker to clarify how these family members could support one another. One outcome of the meeting was a referral of the nephew for employment counseling and enrollment in a local technological training institute. In return for being able to remain in her home, the nephew agreed to assist his aunt with home maintenance and some of her activities of daily living. Most importantly, Ms. Stewart agreed to participate in a prayer and encouragement ministry for congregants who were in the midst of caregiving with a loved one. While these interventions effectively address the presenting issues, there remains more case management to plan effectively for our future care. So as we think about the investment of prayer, time, and expertise in intentional ministry design, we know that it will pay real and substantial dividends for the resiliency and quality of life of those who are at the heart of our shared concern. We realize that there are many moving parts to consider, and that intentionality can appear to move slow toward making a difference. The knowledge and competencies of social workers will be a strong asset in pulling together all and getting all of this right. Whatever the approach, the congregation is like none other in being a venue for encouraging faith development and practice among impoverished older persons. In the end, the offering of help is more likely to at least touch the hem of what God desires for these who both suffer and thrive. So our intent is to raise awareness of the resiliency and needs present in the case of Mrs. Stewart and the thousands of older persons who struggle with spiritual, relational, economic, and environmental impoverishment. We encourage congregations and social workers that care about them to consider the question, how can my congregation enact vision initiatives that resonate with God's working in the lives of vulnerable older persons? We call for more attention to the internal and external assets of this population as a path to energizing resiliency and promoting lasting and substantial helping. The mentions of possible design options inform decisions about the purpose and character of congregational responses. We strongly recommend a collaborative approach to programmatic arrangements and suggest ways that beneficial partnerships can be formed. All of this commissioned by Christ's desire that love for God find its best expression in service to the least of these. And I'd like to conclude with a verse from Luke 15:4-5. Which of you, having 100 sheep, if we lose one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after that which is lost until you find it? And when you find it, you lay it on your shoulders, rejoicing. Thank you for your involvement in our conference today, and hopefully we'll have some time for a conversation.
Hey, Dennis, we do have about 15 minutes left for conversation. Before I open up the lines, do you mind if I go back through some questions that have been raised in the chat environment, and then and then we'll open up the lines for people to ask questions live?
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Let me start. This is a question/comment from Eunice. Eunice says that she finds that many are willing to help the elders they know in their congregations or to give money to agencies. But in her experience, there's few congregational members who are as willing to volunteer to serve the poor elderly in our communities who aren't in the congregation. For example, in their area, Meals on Wheels has a waiting list of a year because they don't have enough drivers. Do you have any recommendations about how to get more church members involved in helping the poor elderly outside of their congregations?
Well, really, I don't want to minimize that. It's a difficult matter. Our particular congregation, we're blessed with a lot of young, older people that have a strong missional sense, and so we've been able to fairly easily activate their interest. But I think that's the exception rather than the rule. I've indicated this before. We need to find ways of helping our congregants see the need. Again, our folks that are of our concern are so invisible. One thing we can work out locally with Van's program is an opportunity to participate in a meal delivery program, maybe just to kind of go along and have a chance to meet a person, see the situation, and use that as a potential bridge for follow-up in terms of deeper involvement. That's one idea that I can think of, and there may be others with other suggestions, but that would be my response.
Thank you, Dennis. Eunice, did you want to do any follow-up on Dennis's response to your question? If so, if you can just hit *6 on your keypad, feel free if you wanted to follow up on your question and or his response.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
I can.
I just find that volunteers in general are people that are just so busy. They have parents who have two jobs, whereas mothers used to be at home alone. I think organizations like Meals on Wheels that depend on volunteers aren't as likely to find them nowadays, and just wanting help on how to find volunteers, I guess.
Okay, well, like I said, in terms of our involvement here, we're blessed with young older persons that have a ministry sense, so we're able to a little more easily present the need before them, and we've had fairly good response in our particular community. There's something else we're doing. I don't know if this will be helpful or not, but we're linking together the service with faith. That is, it's not just about volunteering, but we're trying to stress the importance of faith development as part of the volunteering, so that we would offer the volunteering is part of a larger discipleship effort where the person volunteers, and then we come back together and through scripture and prayer and reflection use what the person's experienced as part of their faith development. So there's kind of a faith reinforcement there that we found useful as well. But you're right, getting very busy people to engage, particularly with these invisible elders, is a real challenge.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis. I have a question from, or a comment from Jolene. She says in her experience with older adults, it often seems that the grandmother is so busy taking care of family members that sometimes they can take advantage of her. Recently, she had an older adult who was being evicted because of the actions of their grandson. And so I think she's talking about some of the challenges that come from the new and expanding roles that older persons are having as sort of key stable points in keeping their families together. Any comments or thoughts, Dennis, that you'd like to share?
Well, it's a growing issue, particularly grandparents, grandparenting their children. And there's such a self-sacrifice orientation there. And they give and they give and they give. And the notion of boundaries and self-care is just not present. One of the ways I think we can be helpful as we work with these caregivers, literally, is to raise the importance of self-care, to talk about limits and what's enough, and try to see if we can build in some resources into their care so that they're not carrying the burden totally by themselves. But just a matter of recognizing what they're doing, is a major assist.
Thanks, Dennis. Jolene, if you hit *6 on your telephone pad, would you like to follow up Dennis's comment with an additional question or elaboration?
Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, Jolene.
Yes, you can.
Okay. I was going to say, I think you guys are actually already kind of briefly touched on a good point after I posted the question, is that, you know, because with the nephew, they offered services to the nephew and looked at helping the the nephew, and in helping the nephew, helping the mother or grand or the aunt or whatever, the older adults. And I think that's a good point in that we need to be looking at, come on, we're social workers, we should know, we should be looking at the whole family system, not just the individual person. But it is frustrating sometimes when it seems like the client's family is constantly just taking, you know, and it seems like anyways, I guess that's...
Totally.
I don't know.
Hello, what can else? You hear me?
Yes, sure can.
Hello, can you hear me? Yes,
yeah.
This is Caroline in New Jersey.
Hi, Caroline.
Hi. The elder people in our congregation are active. They're coming to church, and they look, by and large, as though they're doing well. But I suspect that they have hidden issues. My concern is what can be done to help increase the interaction between the older members of the church and the younger. We have a traditional service, and then we have a contemporary service. And younger people with small children are coming to the traditional church, and older people won't go anywhere near the contemporary service. And at coffee hour, they're kind of not dealing with one another. So what's going on in the lives of the older people is not coming out. They're not sharing much with one another. So do you have any thoughts about what to do within the church when everybody's there to increase the interaction?
I do, and of course it's kind of denominational specific, so let me just share one example and maybe you can make application. In our particular congregation, we have youth programs. Awana would be one of those kind of programs. And we're considering, now we haven't done this recently, but thinking about installing an old secret PAL idea, that is, provide the names of a young person and match that person with an older person. Give the older person their birth date and maybe the date that they became a Christian, certain key elements in their life, things going on in the school per se. And the older person begins to correspond, doesn't sign the note, but just begins, a young person begins to receive notes out of the blue from a person expressing support, encouragement, celebrating birthdays, those kinds of things. And then after a while, we get everyone together, and they get to meet their secret pals and begin to form relationships in that sort of way. The other thing we've done is that young people don't realize that older people were also young once, and so we begin to hold up the fact we have, for instance, an older person, a female person in our congregation who was a basketball star, taking pictures of when she was younger and sort of blown those up and had her join a youth group, and she kind of reminisced a bit about what it's like playing basketball there were three on offense, three on defense, and kind of talked about that. So looking for ways to pique the interest, shared interest between young and old to that kind of advantage. Also, Van just makes a note of the importance of eating together, that food is a great cross-generational kind of experience. And Van, you'll say anything more about that?
Well, then once together, you can use your time to create an initiative like Dennis is discussing, such as PALS. But in our congregation, both old and young come together eating once a week. Other than that, unfortunately, they're kind of split off. And so you could use that time together to discuss creating some kind of intergenerational initiative.
I hope that's helped a little bit.
Yeah, thank you. They're very, very good ideas.
Thank you.
Dennis, we received one question from Wanda.
Okay.
She says in her question, the congregation is aware of the varied needs of impoverished older adults, but many black churches are facing a severe reduction in resources due to increasing community needs, so the more pressing needs get the attention. How can the church be more intentional about meeting their elderly needs in competition with some of the other pressing needs within the community. Wanda, feel free to chime in if I didn't get the exact sense of your question.
What I thought I heard, she referenced specifically African-American congregations, and with the scarcity of resources, those congregations are attending more to present needs, and some of the more long-term needs are not able to be addressed. That's what I thought I heard. I believe that's what I heard. And that's a tough question. In the particular vignette with Mrs. Stewart, the social worker was able, because the congregation was an African-American congregation, was not really able financially to help in all ways that Mrs. Stewart needed. Social worker was able to link with a more affluent congregation who was willing, specifically a Sunday school class, that was willing to provide funds for a pressing or immediate need. And that was delivered with integrity to the pastor of the church, to the person, and consequently that a plan like that would free up additional resources for the African-American church maybe just to address more long-term needs. That's one thing I can think of as a possibility, but I'm not sure that is the kind of response you were seeking.
Dennis, this is David from Illinois.
Hi, David.
I wanted to find out from you what you've discovered about differences between older or younger and larger, excuse me, smaller and larger congregations in terms of their capabilities in ministering to seniors, the elderly.
Smaller and, I didn't get smaller and older?
Larger congregations larger. Versus smaller congregations
okay.
In terms of their capabilities.
Oh, it's quite a difference, obviously. And larger congregations, believe it or not, we have social workers that, at least in our congregation, are willing to step up and volunteer and provide leadership. Smaller congregations don't have that luxury. And so the potential of reaching out to a community agency that can provide consultation and support will be one thing as a congregation seeks to augment its resources for serving this population. And partnerships. Getting congregations of the same size together with a shared purpose it is happening. It's not happening a lot, but it can happen, and that certainly maximizes those kind of resources.
Sounds like a great avenue of ministry for organizations to come alongside these smaller congregations, of which there are many thousands compared to the mega churches.
Yes, and there seems to be a huge gap between public provision, even nonprofit, and congregations. Most folks don't really understand our service network. They are captured in the stigma of welfare. Don't see that these agencies have much to do with the life of the congregation. So we've got some work to do there, I think.
Thank you.
Hi, are you aware of any faith-based organizations who have begun looking at that as one of their areas of focus?
I am, but I can't cite it right now. I have to look it up.
Hi, this is Steve from Chicago. Can you hear
Hi,
me?
Hi, Steve.
Hey, I'm director of a program with the Salvation Army, and we do a lot of work with seniors here in the city. And one of the things I want to launch this spring is a volunteer program, getting churches to come alongside some of our vulnerable seniors, of which we probably service about 1,000 a year.
Good.
And so the model I'm going to use is to we have a grant to hire a full-time person to recruit churches, and our goal would be to train churches and small groups on seniors and how to care for vulnerable seniors, and ideally have a small group that would kind of adopt a senior, have them where it's not a burden to any one individual. You kind of commit an hour to a week, and a small group of 12 could kind of provide all the need or a number of needs for a senior.
Great
and
idea.
So we are trying to launch this, and I'm still in the planning process, but my hope is to really get churches throughout Chicago to do this with seniors in their neighborhood. And my sense is what churches want to help, but they don't have the expertise
right.
Or the ability to start things. And so our goal is to help them create this ministry, and it will be their ministry. We'll provide the training and the follow-up consultation when the inevitable emergencies arise. But the idea is to keep seniors kind of safely in their home and connect them to faith groups so they can be safe and secure long-term. So it's something we're launching probably in May, but I don't know if you have any other thoughts or comments on this. We've got a lot of interest from churches already on this, and I think the key part is to get the pastors commitment behind this and to get a key layperson or pastor kind of to sponsor this at each church. Any thoughts or things as we move forward on that?
Yes, I'm blessed by what you're doing. I think that's so encouraging in these times. I appreciate your sharing that. Yes, I've got some thoughts, and the fact that you're Salvation Army, you will appreciate these thoughts a lot. As you know, one of the problems we've had with congregational involvement with agencies is the notion of strip mining. Sometimes community agencies have seen churches as simply just sources for volunteers and totally ignore the culture of the church, the mission of the church, and those kinds of things. And so I know your approach has been with a sense of respect for the congregation, that as you're talking about this kind of recruitment process, you're emphasizing the importance of faith formation as a result of the involvement. There's some intentionality around those that volunteer having an opportunity to share about the experience and have a chance to pray together, have a chance to share together, and have faith emerge as a result of their involvement. So that it's not just a traditional, going to get some volunteers to do this, but you're also building in this deeply spiritual component as well. Apart from that, I like what you said. You said clearly it's going to be their ministry. And since congregations are so different from one another, I know you'll be paying attention to that particular congregation's decision-making processes and culture and shape your ask along the lines of that culture and not assume all congregations are the same. But anyway, bless you for this involvement. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the thoughts. I had one other comment for the individual that was talking about resources for the grandparents where the grandchild is causing problems. There, in most parts of the country, the area agency on aging has money through federal funding, through the older relatives raising children's funding, and there's money for counseling and case management for these grandparents or older relatives. And I would suggest, those are free services that are available to older relatives raising kids, and find out who has that service in your area, and that's a great resource. We actually have that contract in Chicago, and we do a lot of work with kids and families, family therapy, and that is very helpful.
Terrific. Dennis, I'm sorry, but I'm going to probably have to close this down. Do you want to have one last word, and then I'll close this up?
Well, just the fact that you've signed up for this online time tells me a lot about your commitment to this group, and it's just such a joy to join together with those that have the same sense of call to make a difference here. I do wish we could lay eyes on each other, but I appreciate the opportunity we've had to share.
Terrific.
Thank you for joining us today for NACSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. We hope you found today's session useful and that it will support your efforts to thoughtfully integrate Christian faith and social work practice. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NACSW's activities and events, including NACSW's upcoming convention in the fall, our quarterly audio conference workshops that we offer at no cost to NACSW members, and which includes free CEUs accredited by the Association of Social Work Boards, our online continuing education program, and access to dozens of archived podcasts from the members section of our website. Also, we invite you to join NACSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NACSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening in today to our podcast session today.